Welcome to Disruptive Successor, a show for next generation leaders in family businesses and entrepreneurs who want to disrupt the status quo and take their existing business to a whole new level. We all know that what got us here isn't going to get us there. This show will provide inspiration, advice, and resources to help you create massive impact.
This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, The Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at thegoldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session. Hi, Jonathan Goldhill here. Welcome back to another episode of the Disruptive Successor Show. And today I have a guest. His name is Tom Hannon from Cape Cod, Massachusetts. Tom is a serial entrepreneur and was fortunate enough to not only build but sell a dozen different businesses. Tom actually sold the same concept multiple times in three different decades. In 2017, he had his third iteration of his free magazine delivery business and advertising. He literally was in the best shape of his life. His business was booming. And while training for an Ironman triathlon, Tom suffered a VAD stroke. It was ugly. It was a veritable artery dissection. And although not disabled, he was unable to continue his business. Because he was in a position to transfer ownership through planning, he was able to sell the business within a few months for the full asking price. Without that planning, though, it never would have happened. The financial impact would have been devastating. Tom, welcome to my show today.
Jonathan, thank you for having me on your show today. I'm very excited to be here. And listening to that story brings back an awful lot of memories. That was about 4 years ago that happened.
I bet. So I guess we should start with the obvious question is how do you sell three different businesses in three different decades that are virtually the same concept? Like, what's the secret to that success?
Well, I was really good in that business because the concept of that business was we delivered free magazines, brochures, and marketing materials in major retail locations. I built up this concept where we put these we purchased retail space, and then we put the racks in the supermarkets, and then we sold all the advertising and distribution rights to those racks. But it was weird. I did it. I kind of fell into the business. I was working for the Boston Globe, and I fell into it. And then I built up this business and sold it, and I never expected to do it again. But then I was the company I sold it to. I went to work for them for a couple of years, and then they sold. And my non-compete went out, so I didn't want to work for the new company, so I just started the business again. It was so interesting, and all my clients followed me. And then I built a much bigger business the second time through, because I had all this experience.
Right.
And I had a really nice exit 5 years later. And then I did a bunch of other things. I started businesses. I sold them. And then my old customers started calling me. This was around 2014-ish, 2013. They started calling me, and I decided to do it again. And I did it again. And it was very weird. It was the same exact business three times, many of the same clients every time. And I was able to sell it every time. It was not something that happens to too many people.
Remarkable. So now you had a business. Was it one of these businesses that instead of selling the business in 2005, you wish you had hired a number two? And, you know, you got to retire early, pre-divorce. You had all the skills, tools, and knowledge to build something big, but you sold it instead. Was this one of the businesses, or, and if not, what was the learning lesson from that?
Yeah, that, so I had, what ended up happening, I started that business in 1999, and I actually had a partnership when I started it. And then the partnership lasted about 10 months and then we broke off. And I got real aggressive building that business because I got concerned that some of my clients were going to go out of business and I was going to be left in a difficult spot. So, you know, I started really focusing on marketing, sales, and growth. And I brought that business from around $500,000 in annual revenue to almost $3 million in annual revenue. And I could have kept going. I had no limits as to how big I could have grew that business.
Right.
But what ended up happening is I couldn't find that number two person. I tried hiring them a few times, and each time I tried hiring them, it failed. They wouldn't work out. Maybe it was because I didn't train them right, or I wasn't willing to give up more of the control that I should have to really let them run that the operational part of the business, and I could have focused on what I did really well, which is business development and sell.
Well, it's interesting. As a guy who's been a number two in a number of businesses, I think I'm particularly adept at helping my clients find that number two person. It takes a lot of effort, and a lot of creativity. But also you have to have real clarity about what that person's qualifications are and also what their competencies, but how well they fit in terms of like a cultural fit. And so a number one and number two, they have to be very complementary. And so I've used things like DISC or, you know, Myers-Briggs or Predictive Index to help identify these complementary motivators, complementary skill sets, complementary behavioral profiles. It's not an easy task. So understand that you sold it but you really could have built something big. So let's talk about the partnership issues. You've had a number of partnerships in your businesses, and you've learned a lot, have you, from those partnerships?
Yes, I've had a handful. I've had about four partnerships, and I've learned a lot from being in business with other people. And you know, it's like marriage, but without the sex. And that's you are in bed with somebody,
right?
And your financial lifestyles, how your daily interaction, you're with these partners more than you're with your family sometimes. And, and what you were just saying about like Myers-Briggs and assessments and DISC, that makes so much sense if you could do that beforehand.
Sure.
If you can really figure out if you're going to be a good mix before you ever start the partnership. But unfortunately, like we were talking about, right before we got on, was a lot of people get into business with people and not really know them that well. I mean, if you're going to marry somebody, you're with them for years sometimes before you actually get married.
Right.
But in business, that doesn't seem to be the case.
Yeah. And so in 1991, when I started consulting, I developed a questionnaire, which was called Partnership Issues to Consider. And when I would hand that to people, be they brother and sister, unrelated, non-family members, they'd look at this questionnaire and say, wow, like I have to think about the other person's death, or, you know, or this is even harder. Like, what if I have to put up my credit and because my partner's got a bad credit rating, or what if we are borrowing money and really, you know, I'm the only one again who's got the credit and like it's my name. And now suddenly I've got not only my equity, but I've got debt in the business that I'm personally guaranteeing. I mean, things change, you know, when money changes hands, I say like things change, and you need to think through those things in advance and talk about how we deal with those.
Right. It's like estate planning. My wife and I are going through that now. So there's so many if-thens with estate planning, and you don't know what the end is going to look like. Mm-hmm. You like to think you know what it's going to look like, but you really don't know what it's going to look like. And, you know, it's one of the first things that you need to think about with a partner is what does that partnership agreement look like? Mm-hmm. But it's not only the agreement, it's how you negotiated the agreement that is going to reveal so much about a partner. It's, were they thoughtful for what you were feeling? You know, you think about like Stephen Covey, right? In the terms of seek first to understand before to be and then be understood.
Yes.
Did they work with you that way through the agreement? And if they did, then the chances of you having a successful partnership with them increased dramatically.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, because I've been studying partnerships a little bit more lately as a guy who has been single and dating and was interested in, you know, what makes for a successful relationship, marriage. And I came up with the single word that I think summed it all up, which was respect. I thought it was communication, but, you know, I had a really decent marriage before and communication was constant, but we didn't respect each other. And so we were always communicating, but, you know, if you don't respect each other, then it doesn't matter. So I think respect is like at the foundation, where trust is there as well. But you have to respect that someone has your back. Someone might make choices that you won't agree with, but that you can come to understand and accept. And, you know, I think it takes a long time before you can figure that out. It isn't just like, you can't just do it fast.
Yeah. Well, respect is earned. There's no question about that.
Right.
But it's something when you're in business and you know that you've been in business a long time, you're going to make a lot of decisions. And some of these decisions are really going to work out good. Some of them are not going to work out good. And you have to believe in your partner, or in your case with the family businesses, you know, the father and the sons, the father and the daughters, the mother and the sons and daughters and uncles, et cetera. They have to believe that the person they're bringing in the family can actually make these decisions, and they have to respect their abilities and respect that they can actually get the job done. They might not do it the same exact way, and they're going to make some mistakes, because we all do. But you have to respect that person that if they made a mistake, they're going to, it wasn't on purpose. It was just a mistake.
Yeah.
Or it was something that it might not even have been a mistake. It was just something that didn't work out. I mean, let's say you bought a fitness business 2 months before COVID hit. I mean, you can't say it was a mistake.
Right.
You know, fitness was booming then.
Right.
And it's probably going to come back to just as big as it was. But, you know, things happen.
Sure.
So you have to have that mutual admiration for each other, that it's going to, that things, you, everyone's working in the same, for the same thing.
So what are some of those things that you think people should be looking out for in partnerships?
Well, you know, like I said, you know, like I mentioned to you, the first thing was the agreement. The original partnership agreement is really important. Mm-hmm. But I think the next thing is vision. What's your vision for the business? You know, when you think about where you want to go, when you first started, everyone wants to go, you know, they want to grow a big business. And right. Everyone's got this grand vision of what it's going to be like. But the reality is, as you get into business and things are moving along and things change, just like you said, over time.
Sure.
So did your vision for the business change? And did your partner's vision for the business change? And are you constantly reaffirming what the vision of the business is, whether it's a semi-annual meeting or an annual meeting or quarterly conversations? You know, you need to make sure that you're reaffirming that vision for the business at all times. And if something has changed, you need to be aware that it's changed.
I think that's really important. I see with some of my clients, sometimes they don't have clarity about what the vision is. And so that can be a challenge. But I see also with some family businesses, ones that I come into that are experiencing a lot of dysfunction, they have very different visions about it. Let's take, take three brothers that maybe accidentally are 10 years apart in age. So you've got a 60, a 50, and a 40-year-old. Mm-hmm. And they're in business together. And the 40-year-old wants to grow. The 60-year-old is conservative, doesn't want to borrow, and is starting to think about exiting or transferring. But maybe the 40 and 50-year-old don't have the funds to be able to buy that 60-year-old out. Mm-hmm. I think the worst thing is that they don't have conversations about this and try and get to resolution and do it out of, through a respectful process. But there may be no resolution for the time being.
Yeah, that's a really difficult one. I know that I've been in those situations where I've been in partnerships with, four people. And each person actually wanted something entirely different. And there was, like you said, there were difference in ages. There was a 15-year span difference in ages, difference in where they are in their life, where some people were more closer to the end, and they had an empty nest, or they didn't have kids, and then you had people who had families, and they had much different needs and wants, and their risk tolerance was so different than somebody who was single. So that was really, that's a difficult process to get through. Yeah. And the only way to get through it is to have respectful conversations with each other.
Yeah.
To come up with a solution that's going to work for all parties.
Yeah, because there's really no cookie cutter approach. There are some exercises and tools that I use in my coaching practice to help people get on the same page with each other. Mm. One of them comes out of Imago therapy, which is just sort of a communication tool used in marital counseling. But you could have, two family members with an in-law, like a brother or sister-in-law, that doesn't get along with one of the other family members, can make things very complicated. And, sometimes there's no easy way through or out of that situation.
Well, families bring that aspect to it because they have known each other for their whole lives. Mm-hmm. So then they have all these preconceived notions of what somebody is. And they might be thinking of them as a 12-year-old or as a teen and some of the stuff that they did then. And they're not looking at them as the 35-year-old that's graduated college and has had different experiences in their business. And they've grown over the last 20 years. And they can't get out of that thought process of they're still that kid. So that's a different dynamic totally than somebody that met each other when they were 25 and they don't have a preconceived notion of what they were at a certain age.
Yeah. Now you confessed earlier to me that you don't work as well in partnerships as you do on your own. And I think that is not unique to a lot of other people. And I think it's really important to know if you're in a family business or in a partnership situation, do you play well with others or do you play better alone? And, there's no judgment necessarily associated with it, but we should drive towards a conclusion that gets the person in the right place, doing the right,
And I think that's the key, what you just said about being in the right place. So when you think of partnerships, you think of and family members, everyone has a different skill set. And when I think back to when I had my biggest business doing really well, my biggest skill set, I listen to Neil Patel a lot, his mm-hmm. podcast.
Right.
And he talks about how he focuses all the time on marketing and on UI interactions with the people who visit his website.
Mm-hmm.
And then he lets all the other people run the business. He hires people to run all the aspects of the business he's not good at. So, the same thing should happen in these in that atmosphere is find out what you're good at. Do assessments, do DISCs, do Myers-Briggs, whatever it is, find out what you're truly good at and focus on that. And then your other family members can focus on the things that they're good at, so that you can actually build something significant if everyone's focusing on what they're really good at. And the problems that can run into with partnerships is when the clarity of roles get blurred. That's another big one, because people have lost trust and they start doing things they're not good at because they don't think the other person's going to accomplish the task. And then the other person gets confused as to what they're supposed to be doing, and it causes a lot of problems. So yeah, that's something, you know, like I said before, thinking back what I could have done different, that is one of them. I would have just brought in people that were good at things I wasn't good at. And that business had no limitations if I had been able to accomplish that.
Well, I think that's one of the fundamental tenets of or foundational tenets of coaching, which is that almost all coaches try and, I think, focus their clients on getting into their zones of genius, so that they can do their, what my friend calls their Picasso work, and let other people do the stuff that they're 80% as good as that as you at. And then teaching that concept and pushing it organization-wide is really important. You know, what's interesting though, let's talk about family businesses for a moment, which are, you know, and the difference between some family businesses and corporations, if you will, or the managed enterprise, I think Peter Drucker called it, is that the managed enterprise has more prescribed roles and responsibilities and titles and things. In a family business, what I see all too often, it was true in my family business, I just interviewed a couple of people, one coming up, the roles are, I'll handle the inside, you handle the outside. You know, you do sales and marketing, I'll take care of operations and finance and production, things like that. And they kind of have their domains, which I'm not even sure if it's domains of expertise or more, it's like they're going to divide it up that way. And one person, you know, runs that area, and they might be co-presidents. And it's an interesting concept, and it seems to work. But at some point, it seems like it has to transition, if it's going to scale, into a managed enterprise.
Yeah, I would agree with that, because it's so easy to say, you do sales and marketing and I'll handle the operations. I mean, that's an easy conversation to have with somebody.
Right.
But at some point, you need to get them to interact with each other, so that when you sell somebody something, no matter what it is, whether you're selling a product, whether you're selling a software or a service, once you sell it, you need to be able to transition it to production, operations, however, you know, whatever the business is. And that is, I find, to be one of the most difficult tasks, is taking it from the sale to the actual production. And I don't know why that is. Maybe it's because you're dealing with different people, but that is something I've noticed a lot, is finding people that can handle that in between. So maybe you have a really good project manager that can transition the projects, but you need that. And a lot of companies don't have that. And yeah. I would imagine that could be a challenge quite a bit in the family enterprise too.
I think that almost every business that I think about, it's either driven by sales or by production. And this takes me back to the conversations that we had back when I was in business school, you know, of how do you get sales and production working together? Because they can be at odds with each other. You know, I mean, the famous story, probably familiar to many, is when Steve Jobs, they were about to release an iPhone, and he said, I want some kind of like protective glass on this phone, so that it's unbreakable, and figure out how to make it with that, you know, there's some Gorilla Glass, I think it's made by DuPont, like figure out how to integrate it. And I don't care if the phone is supposed to be released in 3 days, get it into production like now. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, obviously we know that he was quite the visionary, and he drove, his vision is what drove production to have to keep up and catch up with him. But there, it definitely can create a lot of tension in any business.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, when you're in those situations, and this is where the parts of having a good relationship with somebody that has respect, where you have great communication, where you're sharing a vision, where you're having full transparency in what the relationship is, you can have success. But you need those things. You need to have a good relationship with somebody. And so I would imagine that a lot of siblings, and I'm an only child, so I don't have brothers and sisters, but my wife has three sisters. And you can just see it with them, the way that they work together, is there's just something with the siblings all the time. So I would imagine that's a problem that a family business runs into when they're dealing with a lot of brothers and sisters, and they're running into that problem a lot. And you have to break down the walls and almost start from zero and rebuild those relationships in a business atmosphere that where you have that respect for each other, so you can get where you want to go to.
Yep. Any other partnership tips, things to look out for that you'd like to mention?
Yeah. I would say inconsistencies is something to look for. When they're missing deadlines, when they're not doing what they say they're going to do, when things are changing and you don't really understand why they're changing, you need to be very conscious of when someone becomes inconsistent. I think that's something that you have to look for. Another thing that you really need to look for is, have they lost their interest in the business? When you get started, right, everyone's always excited, and everyone's working hard. But as a serial entrepreneur myself, I know that keeping my nose to the grindstone on one business is always hard. I'm always looking for the next thing.
Yeah.
And I would imagine any entrepreneur goes through that. So has somebody started looking for the next thing? Are they looking for an out? Have they just lost interest for whatever reason? Could be lots of reasons in life. You need to be really paying attention to that as you're going through this process, as you're living your life cycle, your business life cycle with somebody.
Yeah, I've been through this with a client who, a couple of brothers that are in business together, and one is always looking at other opportunities that are either related or outside the business. And if the family wants to do it, then he'll bring it into the family business. But if they're like, no, we don't want to do it, he might do it on the outside. But then he's got the issue of, is this taking time away from the primary business, and what was our understanding or our agreement? Is this going to create conflict? So I want to just offer this up to listeners. I have a partnership issues to consider questionnaire, make it available to you. Just ping me after the show sometime, and I'll get that out to you. Super helpful, I think, to go through that process. Because at the end of the day, communication and respect and understanding where each person stands is so vital and so valuable.
Yeah, and I know that we talked about this before too. It's a book that I really feel is good too, is The Five Dysfunctions of a Team.
Yes.
Because it really boils down to trust. And you were talking about respect and trust. That's the vital thing that's going to make it work. Mm-hmm. And if you can have that respect for somebody and trust them, then you have an opportunity to make the relationship work.
Sounds good. So Tom, you're now have transitioned to a franchise consultant, which means that you help people find, select, and choose and invest in a franchise that they want to own. That requires a lot of trust with you, that you've picked the right one for them, that you have their interests in mind. What do you find are some of the challenges for people in making those entrepreneurial decisions to pull the trigger and say, yes, this is the right franchise, this is for me?
It's fear. Fear is the number one thing that stops people from moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
You find the right business for them. They know it's the right business for them, but people are talking to them and they have these preconceived notions, and all they hear are bad stories of people who get into business for themselves, mm-hmm. and they get afraid and they're not willing to move forward because of fear.
Well, as a guy who started and sold a dozen businesses, you can speak probably very well to that fear. And like, it's not always going to work, but it's kind of like the corridor theory of entrepreneurship, which is you have to go down the corridor and start the journey, and another door may open to a bigger opportunity or a better opportunity. I mean, of course, nobody wants to lose money in a venture, but fear is not going to get them any further along. So taking some action is probably almost always the right answer.
Yeah, and it's a long story. So I know we're coming to the end. I can't give you the whole story, but when I was training for Ironman, this is what I tell people about fear is simply this. I didn't know how to swim. And I got pulled out of the pool by a lifeguard who said I couldn't swim in the pool anymore because I didn't know how to swim in the deep end.
Wow.
So I was petrified of swimming to begin with, but I'm 42 years old, mind you, at this point. Mm-hmm. That lifeguard eventually taught me how to swim, and she became my swim coach, and she was the person who ultimately saved my life when I had my stroke.
Wow. So talk about the corridor theory of entrepreneurship. I mean, you've got to get into the pool to be able to do an Ironman, right? I mean, you got to start the swimming. You got to start somewhere. And look at what that opened up for you. And here you are today to tell the story.
Yeah. Lifetime friends, I was able to do all these great things because I was willing to take on my fear. And ultimately the person who helped me get through it saved my life. So these are the things that can happen if you're willing to get past your fear. There's a lot of, there's so much more on the other side if people can get through it. But it is the most difficult part of getting them through it, is getting them through the fear.
Yeah. Well, being a serial entrepreneur, you certainly learn to conquer fear head on. Just jump into the waters. And hopefully as an entrepreneur, you learn to try and minimize your risks. Contrary to what most people think, that entrepreneurs are risk takers. I mean, they are. But really true, wise entrepreneurs, I think, are risk averse. They try and they'll do everything they can to think through everything they can to minimize the risks associated with their endeavor. So,
an underlooked thought.
Absolutely. All right, Tom. Hey, if people want to get a hold of you, you're a franchise consultant based in Cape Cod. How do they connect with you?
You can connect with me on LinkedIn. So it's Thomas B. Hannon Jr. You can look me up that way, and you can also look at my website, which is Franchising Connection, no S, just franchisingconnection.com. Book an appointment with me. I'd love to help anybody who wants to look at the journey of going into business for themselves. My service is 100% free to anybody who wants to walk down that path. So I'd be excited to talk to them.
Great. So if you're a wannabe entrepreneur, you're thinking about a side hustle or another business, franchises are a great way to minimize your risk. You get in with the right franchise. It's tested. It's proven, hopefully. And your risk is certainly reduced. So, Tom, thanks for being on my show. This is another episode of Disruptive Successor, a podcast by, for, and about family businesses and entrepreneurial journeys. If you like the show, please share it with others. And thanks for listening.
This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, The Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it
and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at the goldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session.
Thank you for joining us on the Disruptive Successor Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe, review, and share with a friend who would benefit from the message. If you're interested in picking up a copy of my book, Disruptive Successor, go to disruptivesuccessor.com.